The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Unless this number is way above what people were expecting, we could be looking at least a short to possibly intermediate bottom for clearly bonds, possibly general equities, and most definitely for some of the commodities, especially the hard hit ones like copper, and of course gold, which is grudgingly giving ground and really has been more of a victim of the sell-off than a reason for the sell-off.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's, of course, the voice of Peter Grandage. He's known as the former Wall Street whiz kid. I don't know if you know his story. He joins me here just about every 2 weeks. You know, we have him every other week just for some market analysis and what's going on in the economy and really for a spiritual look at finances. This guy, without even a high school diploma, and I love those stories. You know, Peter Jennings never graduated from college. You take a look at some of these great entrepreneurs, they never went to college or never graduated, never finished. Peter, likewise, became, you know, famous on Wall Street. He says half famous because he made and lost millions of dollars. I mean, when you make millions, that's a lot of fun, right? To lose it, it can send you in a spiral. He chronicles his story in a book called Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid. I think he made it free for everyone who wants to see it. And if you go to his website, petergrandage.com, you can probably check it out. If you go to relevantradio.com, I never know what the keyword is. It could be Whiz Kid. Just do a search for it. Peter was gracious enough to let Relevant have it up there for you to read. But he tells his journey of how his Catholic faith led to a true Christian conversion. And if you want to tap into his expertise, he does provide guidance on matters of finance through his company, Peter Grandage & Company. You can check it out. I was looking at numbers today and just wondering how bad things are going to get. I had dinner last night with some friends, and one of the women there you know, connected to somebody who's really, really well, I mean, tens of millions, probably hundreds of millions of dollars. And they were just talking about the housing market and the economy, and his forecast for the future was not very bright, unfortunately. You heard, I'm sure, last week, the inflation numbers from the government wasn't good news either for the administration. I mean, it's really hard if you think about it. How do you spin 9.1% inflation as something good? How is 9.1 transitory, right? When Joe Biden took office, I think inflation was like at 1.3%. How do you can spin it at 2, maybe 3%, maybe say it's transitory at even 4. But when you're knocking on double-digit inflation, that's hard to do. Gas prices have been coming down, right? That's for sure. I was at the pump yesterday. I was glad to see the numbers a lot lower, right? The president, of course, took quick credit for that. He liked to claim credit for that, even though AAA says it was due to the demand going down because you are not driving. People are saying, I can't afford to put $100 in my gas can or my gas tank. I just can't do it. So people are saying, I'm not gonna drive, or we'll just, you know, lump all of our trips together, or we'll carpool. So AAA says demand is down as a result. That's keeping the prices down, or, you know, supply and demand prices are dropping. People can't afford to drive at $5 a gallon. Inflation really is what's dominating people's concern right now. There was a new chart from the American Enterprise Institute. It shows that, excuse me one second, it's something in my throat. It shows that the difference in prices on a number of different products and services. They were looking at January of 2000, and then they compared it to like June of this year. So, you know, we've been noticing this huge inflation rate, and things like not just your chicken and you know, all the groceries and gas and things like that. But this chart looked at things like hospital stays, right? Medical visits, college costs. I was stunned. It wasn't 4%, 5%, 10%, right? These things have gone up more than 75%. In the last 22 years, hospital costs have soared more than 200%. You might be trying to swallow that bitter pill, right? If you're buying a TV, guess what? Good news. Those costs have gone down 80% in that time period. Really, it's true. You look at a 50 or 60-inch TV today, 70-inch TV, it's ridiculous how cheap it is. New cars, household furnishing, clothing, they're all up. They started the spike since January of last year. And I found out that consumers now are spending about $10,000 more for a used car. I said to my kids, and they get mad at me when I do this, I'll send them I'll send them links to news stories that I come across. And this is one. I keep telling them, make sure you maintain your car, man. I'm telling you what, it's going to cost $10,000 more. People are spending as much as $10,000 more on used cars. Used car prices are up, double digits, 30, 40%. It's ridiculous. So, in fact, CNBC right now is reporting that when CEOs of major companies have calls with their shareholders, inflation's been mentioned on the majority of those calls as has their response to it. So what's their response? They're raising their prices. Why? Bottom line is, they want to make larger profits. Who pays that? You and I. So, I mean, we feel this. It's rippling down throughout every sector of our economy and into your life. One final bit of news for you, and we'll talk to Peter about it, get his take on all this, and you can join us too. It's 888-914-9149. Love to have your input. Social Security, I don't know if you're close to, maybe you are on Social Security right now. You get that monthly paycheck. Maybe you're getting ready for it. Social Security is impacted by inflation. The Senior Citizens League says that the cost of living adjustment for next year, now check this out, I don't know whether it's going to happen or not, your cost of living adjustment could be as high as 10.5%. Of course, that's going to eat into what money there is for Social Security right now, and we've been talking about that. How long can it sustain itself? What's it going to look like in the future, and what's it going to mean to those still in the workforce? I'm joined this afternoon by Peter Grandich. We'll take your calls. We'll talk all things finance and spiritual. Peter, good to have you back.
Good to be with you. You know, when you paused there, I thought you were actually taking your hemlock early this time.
I really should. What I should do is take a sedative, Peter, before I talk to you. That's what I need to do. No, I had something in my throat. I had to grab my water here and throw it down. Hey, tonight I'm having dinner with a buddy of yours, somebody you introduced us to. Chris Temple's in town, he and his wife. So.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's good.
My wife, Kathy, and I were going to head out and grab something to eat with him, so it'll be good to connect with him. But I'm sure he's going to pass along his regards, so I'll do the same for you, okay?
That's great. Enjoy your dinner.
Yeah, no, good guy. Peter, let's talk about companies right now who want to keep their prices down. Usually they want to. According to the CNBC report that I saw, these CEOs are pretty happy with the fact that they can raise their prices and get higher profits because of this. Once those prices go up, do they ever come back down? And what do you see in terms of what we're going to be paying in the not too, I want to say not too distant future, but I think it's going to be longer than that. So give me your analysis if you could.
So I think what's important is take a step back and, let's say before the pandemic hit, we were already speaking, you and I, for quite some time about, I would bring up how the vast majority of Americans were kind of living beyond the means. I'd always tell you that 6 or 7 out of 10 that we were seeing in our planning group were living at least one lifestyle above where their finances really supported. And then the pandemic hit, and it went on. And finally, as it seemed to ease this year, people were then hit with just an unbelievable amount increase for everyday needs, food, energy, gas, things of that nature. And it was like a 1-2 punch for a lot of people. And when you have almost 2/3 of Americans now live paycheck to paycheck, and 1 out of 3 of Americans, on $250,000 income are living paycheck to paycheck. And the people making less than that go, how's that? Well, that plays into why I tell you that people are living beyond their means, because they're living a lifestyle even above that, great income compared to, people that are struggling at maybe 1/3 of that. Yeah. And then you look at almost half people don't even have $1,000 saved for a rainy day. And the average 401k now has just $71,500 in it. So Americans were already not in the best financial condition, irregardless, we are not even getting to the point of how bad the United States itself is. And then they have the pandemic, and then they have this cost. So right now, I believe, and that's why when you played that tape of my, podcast I did just before the CPI number to my clients and readers. Right. I thought the market could rally, especially bonds, because it was oversold and all this stuff. But right now, people are living in, you know what, Pete, I've had one or two tell me this week, you're right about everything. I'm going to worry about it in a month. I want to enjoy this summer. It's the first chance I had to be with my kids in 3 years. So people are, even with everything that's happening and the negatives you're hearing, they're still forestalling facing the inevitable. And here's the two big problems that are going to come down the road that you're going to be talking about, Drew. One is you have inflation much higher than what the CPI was. Anybody that's been in the business any length of time, Chris will share this with you. The CPI is computed in a way to really underreport inflation. So anybody will tell you things were going up double digit for almost 2 years. But what hasn't kept up with that is wages. The average person has not been able to keep up. So not only falling back and prices going up higher, but everyday needs are becoming harder and harder to pay for. And how do we know that? Well, Walmart and Target both gave a preview a couple weeks ago and said, hey, prepare yourselves for us not having as great quarters. And in their report, a lot of people didn't pay attention, but what they stressed, the reason why they felt their profitability was going to be down is because they were seeing the large percentage of people were switching from purchasing disposable items in their store, which tend to have bigger markups, and just buying necessities like food that doesn't have the big profit margins in them, and therefore they were preparing their shareholders for that. But that was a sign already of how things were slowing down dramatically. But when we talk about inflation, it's very hard for the financial community to wrap their hands around it because it goes back to something I've been talking to for almost 2 years, and that was the lack of experience. The average financial advisor has only been giving advice since the last financial crisis, let alone try to have them talk or think or know something firsthand about the last time we've seen it was 30 or 40 years ago. And even when, if you were like me, at least a young man that had some experience about inflation back in the late 70s and early 80s, we didn't have a component then called supply constraints. We just had a demand situation that the Fed was able to fix by dramatically rising interest rates. Now we have a compounded problem of not only inflation going up because of demand, too much demand for too few products, but we actually have a supply constraint, and that's not about to be fixed, Drew, anytime soon. It involves a lot of geopolitical and social and economic factors that aren't going to be solved in September and October. So I guess the best thing to say is we're in a respite period, and you know, I understand that. I think we're going to be through that, at least to Labor Day, till the kids go back to school, and maybe even then people get caught up on the holidays and the election coming. But I don't see 2023 when everybody gets through all this and are going to be worse off than ever before, the government more of a mess than it's ever been, and we owe more money and geopolitical problems around the world and everything. I really don't see how everybody that's calling this bounce the new bull market and we're going to go back to where we were. I think, you know, at best, the market for some time to come will, you know, sideways, choppy, maybe down and all. And one last thing, Drew, that I haven't really discussed with you, I think is very important, a lot of your listeners. We have this retirement planning where people that maybe have been retired for several years already, they made that plan based on a return number that has been difficult to get. They weren't able to get it in the income market anymore. So they speculated. They went into stocks and cryptocurrencies and things like that nature. And now those things not only decline, but they're not likely to make those numbers again. So those people are already out of the workforce. Their opportunity to make more money, unless they go back to work, is not going to happen. So there's a lot of things still that I foresee anyway, that, you know, I still want to stay in my foxhole. I still think it's better to err on the side of caution, even though for at least a short period of time, there'll be a respite from the, you know, what we've seen earlier this year.
Yeah. My guest today, Peter Grandage, if you want to join us, feel free to dial in 888-914-9149. We'll go to the phones in just a couple minutes, but good time to get in. The Fed is going to raise interest rates again, Peter, and I'm just thinking of how that's going to impact car loans, home loans, credit cards, student loans. You know, is this going to cause the economy I don't know, to hit the brake as a whole? Or what do you think is going to happen here in the not-too-distant future, and how high do you think they're going to raise it?
Well, the Fed has – let me take a step back again. You know I coin, and I don't throw everybody under the bus when I say this, right. But I throw the majority, at least 51%, that work on what I call the don't-worry-be-happy crowd of Wall Street. And they have really been addicted to – and it's been called a lot of different things, and I don't think I'm the first one calling it, but it's been monetary heroin. It's been this creation of money, seeing our deficits go up trillions of dollars, which artificially support and help rise and cause the stock market to rise a lot further than it would have. And we've seen that in other markets, too. That was one of the things that helped the cryptocurrency market, and it also was the one that helped the last bubble that's now starting to burst, and that's the real estate market. We've seen it in stocks, we've had it in bonds, we've had it in cryptocurrencies, and now the real estate market. So I don't think the Fed is going to be raising interest rates well into 2023. I think there'll be too much pressure for them because we'll not only see a recession, but a hard landing. That soft landing is really a myth. There's been so few times they've been able to do it, and it's just too complicated now to expect that. And I think once the political decisions are made in November, the Fed may be facing a really problem where we have a Democratic president, but no longer a supporting party, at least in the House and possibly even in the Senate, which is going to make even less chance of things getting done that need to be done. There hasn't been good, in my opinion, good legislation for business overall in almost 20 years, and it's only gotten worse these last few years. So I don't see how even whatever they may raise the rates to and where they may stop, I'll tell you this much, the only way you can whip inflation and actually beat it, you have to have real interest rates. You have to have rates above the rate of inflation. Yeah. So even if they cut the inflation rate in half, down to 4 or 5%, mm-hmm. still going to mean we're probably going to see, at least for a brief period, interest rates above that. So car loans and mortgages. Wow. Well, they're, you know, listen, Drew, mortgages got close to being there, up near 6% already. And then at that point, because remember, if we have an interest rate for any length of time, say for multiple of years, at just 5%, our national debt is going to be $31 trillion. Put a 5% interest on that, we're going to pay $1.5 trillion in interest expense on our debt. We've only taken in over $3 trillion once in tax revenue for a year. So that can't last. And so all this talk of the Fed will ease again, you're hearing this word tossed, they're going to pivot, and you know that's the sale point that you got to load up on stocks and all that. This time around, the crack cocaine isn't going to work the way that it's done before, monetarily wise, and that's why I have trouble being optimistic past the next couple weeks or a couple months.
Well, it's well said. A little frightening. I need another glass of my sedative here.
Sorry.
Peter. It's like, man, and I can't argue against it. I'll never forget the time I was coming out of the radio studio one time, and I bumped into a guy. I don't know whether it was in Montana. I forget where it was. And he says, he's been listening to you for a long time. I think you actually met with him. And, you know, because you hear this, and sometimes I think, can it, what do you think? And he says, you know, I agree with Peter, 95, 97% of what he says. So you're on point, and this guy has done very well. So I hope you're wrong. You know that all the time. I love you, but, we'll see what happens.
Can I just respond to that?
Sure,
go ahead. Just quickly. And this is very important because nowhere is it more important to say than on Relevant Radio. Hope is the best spiritual strategy we have. In fact, as Catholics, if we didn't have it, you know, what would we be going on? We need it. It's a wonderful thing to have, and those that are blessed to embrace it, no matter what their financial situation is, that's a real gift. But it's the worst investment strategy known to mankind. And I am finding more people who are struggling now at all levels. Even some of the past athletes I've dealt with me come to back to me, despite me not wanting to work in the, you know, with professional teams and all anymore because of all this wokeness. But even there, they're coming and going, Peter, I just hope it can go back up and I can get out of this. Hope is a horrible investment strategy. And I'll just say to people that if we get a blessing, if you struggled when this was declining and said to yourself, boy, I wish I just didn't own this, and you get some of it back or all of it back, remember how you were feeling then, and remember the old saying about fool me once and fool me twice. Mm-hmm. So I, in a sense, hope for a rally because there's a lot of people that are very overextended in markets, and I hope they, you know, they realize that, you know, that take an opportunity to lessen. We don't need all this mental anguish. It's tough enough to deal in the world on a day-to-day basis. We shouldn't be having to sweat what the stock market is doing every day.
You got it. Diane is listening in Boston, Mass. She was, I guess, either ask you a question or share her thoughts. Hi, Diane. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I don't know if you have any information about this or if something that you agree with, but I've been reading on and off for a while now that supposedly our dollar is supposed to basically get basic, for lack of a better term, turned off overnight and being replaced by some type of a digital currency that's supposed to be backed by gold. And I guess we basically would turn our dollar bills in and for this other type of currency. So I don't know if this is true or if it's something that you know, have caught whiff of or know anything of and what you think about it.
So several governments, including our own, have spoken about eventually introducing a digital currency. There's nothing concrete yet, certainly in the United States and most other countries, but it's something that is likely to happen because even though the cryptocurrency market, two-thirds of the money in there went to money heaven, there are going to be survivors, and it is a block technology does have validity, but needs to be treated like any other technology stock and not a new one to monetary. But I'll tell you what's even far more important than your question that you asked, and I've only begun to speak about it publicly in the last couple of weeks. The BRIC nations, and BRIC nations are Brazil, Russia, India, and China, they have been aggressively, openly speaking now about introducing a new currency to compete with the U.S. dollar, and also inviting other countries, including Saudi Arabia, who has just noted that they are considering joining. We are already kind of against it because by having the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency, we've gotten away with the high debt levels that we've had. If and when there's a true competitor that either competes with us or actually replaces the dollar, then that will compound the issues here in America where we go all its debt and all 10 or 20 fold. So I think, there'll be some sort of currency alternative other than paper. I think more important is to watch this news that's developing. In fact, there were a lot of news stories today where both Putin, the Chinese leader, and the Indian leader now are speaking openly about preparing to replace the West as the economic powers in the world, and with that, introduce their own currency. So I think that's a more important thing for people to watch than whether or not there's a digital coin coming out by our government.
Yeah. Diane, thanks. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. I think you're right, Peter, on that. I do think that Russia and China would love independence from the dollar like that. But the dollar is pretty strong right now, isn't it? I thought it was on parity with the euro. What's happening with the greenback just in general?
You're absolutely right, and this would be the uniqueness of the time that it would peak on that. But what has happened with the dollar is it's really been the lesser of three evils. The two main currencies that compete with the dollar is the euro. The Europeification has been a failure. I mean, I think within a year or so, you're going to have to see some sort of breakup. They can't continue in the way that they are. You see the huge problems that Italy has before. They're not the only one. And then if you get past the euro, the yen is the next biggest one, and there's a country that literally has mortgaged the house by literally becoming the really own buyer or their own bonds to beat a terrible deflationary period that they had for a couple of decades and have seen their debt levels raise dramatically. So the West is not in great shape. And it is, if I was advising, I don't need to be and I wouldn't want it, but if I was advising the Russians and the Chinese, they're probably looking at a very good opportunity time to introduce it, especially with a president that clearly looks like he's a one-term president and really really weakened as a world leader, that'll be a good time to come out. So I would think that what happened not only in Afghanistan, but more important with Ukraine, I think that probably put on a fast track for them want to do what they want to do. And by the way, Europe is going to put tremendous pressure by the fall to make some sort of settlement in the UK. They got in bed, country like Germany. Trump was right in that regard when he said, are you crazy, Germany? We're paying four times as much to support NATO to protect you from the very country you now totally depend on getting your energy. I mean, they literally painted themselves in a corner there. And I think they're not going to want to see their people, and people won't stand for it freezing and starving. So one of the things I think that hopefully will be a positive, the Ukraine situation will try to be forced into a some sort of settlement that a couple months ago no one would have perceived have happened. But the U.S. dollar for now is, you know, okay, but I really, really think we're going to see that change and see a competing currency come out of the BRIC nations within 12 or 24 months, Drew. I really do.
Well, Peter, thanks for the analysis and for the expertise. We only have a minute left. Let me give you the final thoughts, a spiritual note maybe to leave us with.
Well, if you think I was bad, I think by the time Chris speaks to you tonight, you're definitely going to least need an after-dinner drink. But by and large, I think what people have to remember is God knows all this is transpiring, and he gave us a manual to life. And ironically, and I've told you this many times, you know it, I don't have to tell you, but some listeners, is there's more matters about finance in the Bible than there is about heaven and hell. So if you haven't read it in a long while or haven't been spending a lot of attention to it, maybe it's a good time to go back and look at it, not only for the spiritual guidance, but the matters of finance that God has so many lessons within that book.
Well, Peter, God bless you. People can tap into your expertise, too. At PeterGrandage.com, is that the best way to follow you?
Absolutely.
All right, check it out, PeterGrandage.com. You can check out his podcast. You can get plugged into his newsletter. And, of course, Peter does some financial work with you, too, if you want. So I guess you can always tap into his expertise that way if you're looking for some planning. I got to take a short pause. I'm going to be back with more, so don't go away. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Mrs. Pia Gorella stated that in 1945, shortly after the war ended, on September 20th, she was in the countryside, a few kilometers or 12 miles from Turin, and she wanted to send Padre Pio a congratulatory telegram on the anniversary of his sores. But she found no one who could send it to him due to being in the countryside. Suddenly, she remembered Padre Pio's recommendation. When you are in need, send me your angel. So she took a few moments and asked her guardian angel to personally congratulate him. A few days later, she received a letter from a friend of San Giovanni Rotondo, Rosanella Placentino, in which she informed her that Padre Pio had told her, "Write to Mrs. Gorella and tell her that I thank her for the spiritual congratulations that she gave me."
You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Is that not cool? Don't you love it? Padre Pio is perhaps one of my favorite saints. He was an absolute wonder worker. The stories that surround him are legion. They really are. I like to talk about him normally in September. His feast day is the 23rd. Same day my second son was born. And he's just a powerhouse saint. He's a man who literally healed thousands. I mean, I'm talking not just a couple, thousands, right? He was known as a miracle worker. Not since St. Francis of Assisi has there been such a miracle worker. The man was a mystic. If he was still alive, it'd be amazing. I mean, with modern-day travel, I couldn't imagine how many people would swarm San Giovanni Rotondo where he was from. He could read souls. He knew in case after case exactly what a person in confession had done. You go in there, and if you hold something back, he would know it, right? He'd call you out on it. He had this extraordinary gift, these charisms. Eyewitnesses, competent eyewitnesses, have seen him in dozens of cases of bilocation, peering thousands of miles, I mean, miles and miles. I don't know how far, right? You know, from where he actually was, the man suffered, you know, legitimate stigmata. I think he was actually the first priest ever to bear the wounds. St. Francis of Assisi wasn't. He was attacked by the devil, right? He was beaten up by the devil. He'd see his angel. He had wounds that bled. They say he lost a pint of blood a day. They were miraculously healed upon his death. This is a priest who could predict the future, who could see into heaven, and who by his heroic life of virtue led so many people to God and to faith. The potency of Padre Pio is, it's hard to compare. I mean, God gives everybody graces. God gives everybody certain gifts and charisms. There was a special anointing on this man. That's all I can say. You know, I love these stories of bilocation. We're going to talk to Nick Jaboni about that coming up. And a lot of what, I want to get you in touch with this. There's a center here in the country. I think you should tap into this. As I say, he healed thousands. If you need to take a pilgrimage, you don't want to leave the country to do it. There's some incredible shrines here in our own country. One of them is the Padre Pio Center. And I'll tell you about that. There was a great miracle that started it. Eyewitnesses, as I said, when it came to bilocation, right? Pilots saw him bilocate in the air, you know, and ward them off. I mean, the stories go on and on. People would say he would transfigure. His masses were amazing. I can go on and on about him. But rather than do that, I want to welcome to the program today a friend. His name's Nick Jaboni. He's the executive director of the National Center for Padre Pio in Bartow, Pennsylvania. You might hear them. The reason I thought I'd talk about it today, I actually heard a kind of a promo for this beautiful shrine in my headset. I said, you know, I often relegate Pio just to one time a year. I'm a son of Pennsylvania. I was born and raised in that great state. And about 20 miles south of Allentown, there's a small little town called Bartow. And it is there that Vera Calandra, she was from that little town, gave birth to a daughter, also named Vera, who ended up being very sick. And in 1968, in response to a prayerful plea by, just this heartfelt plea, really, if you will, to Padre Pio, Padre Pio called Miss Calandra to her monastery in San Giovanni. And I'll tell you the story. Rather than that, let me let Nick tell you the story. He's here to fill you in on the origins of this, how Padre Pio today is still working, and all that awaits you if you ever have a chance to be in Pennsylvania and visit this holy site. Hey, Nick, thank you for joining us today. It's great to have you back.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Drew. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I mean, I could fill a half hour just talking about Pio. I've scratched the surface of some of the most fundamental things that people know and remember about him. I don't think a whole lot of people know about the treasure that we have here in our country alone. Pio worked miracles. People came from everywhere to pray for him. Maybe let's start with the story of Vera and the miracle that came as a result of Pio's intercession and why she made it her passion to introduce people, especially here on the other side of the Atlantic and in the continental United States, especially to this great wonder worker.
Sure, Drew. The foundress of our center was named Vera Calandra, and she was from the town of Norristown, Pennsylvania, a little bit outside of Philadelphia. She had a daughter named Vera, so in my story here, I refer to Big Vera and Little Vera, but or Mom Vera and Baby Vera. But so Baby Vera was born in 1966, and she was born with some congenital defects of her urinary system, and they were quite severe. And the Calandra family, that was our last name, Calandra, family had prayed to many, many saints, visited many shrines, but they had been given, Mrs. Calandra had been given a book about Padre Pio, a prayer book. And in desperation, she was in her living room one day and she reached for that prayer book and she was praying. And during her prayer, she heard a locution, I guess you would call it, interlocution in her head that said, "Come quickly, but do not delay." And as she would tell the story, the whole room was filled with this beautiful scent, this bouquet of flowers. She described it as like a heavenly floral scent. And she knew that she was being called by Padre Pio to go to Italy. And with her baby, with Vera. Now, Vera at this time was about 2.5 years old. They had already done so many surgeries on her. And it was actually, if people remember, Ronald Reagan's Surgeon General was C. Everett Koop.
Yeah.
And Dr. Koop was the head of urological surgery down at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia at the time. Well, Dr. Koop had done numerous surgeries, everything that he could, and he ended up finally removing her urinary bladder completely and told the Calandras, Vera and Harry, her father, that they had, you know, that there was no hope for Vera. And this is what had put them in that situation and what found Mom Vera begging Padre Pio for her life. So she had a 2.5-month-old baby, little Christina. She had 2.5-year-old Vera, who was the one who no longer had a bladder. And she had a 10-year-old son, Michael, who was the four of them went. Vera took the three children with her over to San Giovanni Rotondo. And the story of their trip itself is filled with little miracles. There's one story. I mean, this was September, still very, very hot. There's a story of one train ride. If you've ever gone to San Giovanni Rotondo these days, it's not difficult or it's not easy to get to. But it was a very arduous journey. There's a story of the baby needing milk and a mysterious stranger handing a bottle of milk through a train window. All kinds of things that eventually, wow, after this long journey, Vera got to see Padre Pio. And to see Padre Pio, she had to go to a mass that was 5 a.m, get the baby ready, get Vera ready. And one of the reasons that they brought Michael was because they actually had to have 10 suitcases that were filled with cloth diapers because poor Vera, baby Vera, could not retain any fluid. So all part of a crazy trip that she finally gets in front of Padre Pio. And it was in a group, and Padre Pio had kind of was wheeled through in a wheelchair, kind of gave general blessings to a bunch of people. And Mrs. Calandra, being very tenacious, said, "This is not what I think Padre Pio asked for." And she went back the next morning and she asked for a private visitation, which she was granted. And Padre Pio came out and he blessed the little baby on the head. He prayed over baby Vera, 2.5-year-old Vera, the ill one. And then he placed his hand, his bandaged, stigmatized hand over Mom Vera's, to her mouth, which she kissed. And there was a lot of things that she had planned that she wanted to say to Padre Pio. But all she was able to do was say a prayer in her heart, their eyes locked. And she said, "You know, Lord, please make a miracle that the world may know." And she took that to mean that if a miracle was granted, if her daughter was healed, she would make sure that the world would come to know about Padre Pio. And she made it home. Baby started to eat better, baby Vera started to eat better and act better on the plane on the way home. And she called Dr. Koop when she got home. And he said, "Well, I'm not sure what's going on, but bring her down." And went back down to Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, did scans, and lo and behold, there was a rudimentary bladder growing where one had not been before. Yeah. And as I point out to some people, they say, "Well, could a bladder regrow?" Well, no, a bladder is kind of like a heart. You know, it's a major organ. If you were to take your heart out, another one doesn't regrow there. But Dr. Koop would go on to write about this in a couple of medical journals. Vera is alive and well today. She's 56 years old, works here at the center. But Mrs. Calandra, Vera, Mom Vera, went back to the Capuchin priests at the end of, right after Padre Pio died. Padre Pio blessed the baby, baby Vera, in 1968, just 2 weeks before he died. So when she went back to say thank you, he was already deceased, but she said thank you to the friars who were there and offered herself and her services and said, "What can I do to help make Padre Pio known?" And so they gave her some resources. They gave her a priest who had assisted Padre Pio for the last 7 years of his life. They traveled around together. She founded a center in the Philippines. She helped with a center in Ireland, and she ended up founding the National Center for Padre Pio here in the United States.
That's amazing. My guest today, Nick Jaboni. We'll take a few of your calls if you want to join us. I only have them for a few minutes, though, as we're approaching the final segment of my time with you today. The number to get in, 888-914-9149. Grab a pen and paper, too, because when I come back, you know, I know a lot of people are very concerned about maybe international travel. You can actually take a pilgrimage to this site. I mean, Pennsylvania is just so rich with both American history as well as with great spiritual history. I mean, some of the great saints have spent time in the Philadelphia area and the neighboring areas. So grab a pen and paper. I'll get you plugged in. Maybe you're looking for a healing or a cure. Maybe you're praying for the intercession of a great saint. This is a wonderful wonder worker to turn to. So when we come back, we'll bring you up to speed on that and so much more. Don't go away.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
There's a beautiful story about Padre Pio. After the war, three GIs were returning from Italy to America. But before they came home, they heard about this priest who was able to read hearts and who bore the wounds of Christ. And so they decided to go down to San Giovanni Rotondo. And one of the three was a skeptic. He didn't believe in this, but he went along for the ride. And as they arrived, Padre Pio had just finished celebrating Mass. And as he was coming out into the square, of course, thousands of people are out there and wanted to get a glimpse of him. But this unbelieving GI supposedly yelled out, "Show me your wounds." And the crowd hushed, wondering where this came from. And he yelled it out again, "Show me your wounds." And Padre Pio walked to this GI and quietly said to him, "Show me yours." And he walked him into the church, into the confessional, and there this GI confessed his sin. As he tells his story, evidently he had inadvertently pulled away in the heat of battle. And because he did that, many of his buddies died. It was a wound that he bore on his heart and was not unable to confess it. And yet Padre Pio was able to see that wound and lead him to the confessional where that wound was healed. It's a beautiful story, and it's a true story. And I think when we come to confession and we are willing to admit our wounds, then God can heal them if we allow him to.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I've always loved that testimony. A friend of mine who is now a Catholic priest, his name's Father John Clote, actually put together a documentary called The Miracle Box, and that's where that story came from. It's well worth seeing it. A great program on the power of and the sacrament of reconciliation, but also great examples there. You heard that incredible story of Padre Pio. I'm joined today by somebody who knows the life, the legacy, the power of Padre Pio, unlike anybody. That's Nick Jaboni. He's executive director of the National Center for Padre Pio in Bartow, Pennsylvania. You might hear some of the promotion for that run on our ads. It sparked my, you know, it just kind of made me think, you know, I really should introduce people who don't know anything about Padre Pio to him. And what a great way to do that today with Nick. And Nick, so many great stories. Gosh, we could fill, you know, a week, you know, easily every hour with what Padre Pio has done and who he was and, you know, so many different things. But, you know, here at stateside, I know you've got your center in Bartow. I'm curious because, you know, one of the things I had an encounter with once, and I know many people have, was the glove of Padre Pio. Of course, he bore the wounds of Christ and bled those gloves, soaked and captured his blood. But when I was prayed over with these gloves, I could almost feel a heat radiate from them. And a lot of people account that. Almost like there's I don't know, like they get hot is the best way to say it. You could feel this burning almost coming from these gloves. Does your center have authentic items related to Padre Pio? What are they going to see if they go there? Can somebody pray with them with a relic, or how does it work?
Sure, we certainly do. Actually, every day, we have the rosary every day at 11:30 a.m. here in Philadelphia. That's Eastern Standard Time. And after the rosary, people can come forward and venerate the relic, pray with the relic. And we definitely have people that have reported things like that. It's not uncommon for us to have reports of healings, people that people that will pray with the glove and then come back and later report healings. We also have a very large collection, the largest collection in North America of authentic artifacts and relics of Padre Pio in our museum. We have a beautiful world-class museum, and I would say that the one relic that's most striking to me is we have a piece of cloth, a large cloth, that covered Padre Pio's side wound, covered his side wound that he would wear underneath his habit and underneath his shirt. And you can see that it's just absolutely soaked with dried blood. And so you'll see people going over and praying with that. But there are all kinds of different relics that we have here that people can come through and see in our museum.
That's fantastic. Can you book a pilgrimage there? I mean, what are some of the events that are coming up? If people are interested and they want to get connected.
No, absolutely. So first of all, as you mentioned, we're in the Diocese of Allentown, Pennsylvania, but we're about an hour northwest of Philadelphia by car. So we are accessible in that way from the, two bigger cities. People can call us anytime. It's 610-845-3000, 610-845-3000. But our website also, you can book right through there. It's just www.padrepio.org. We have a visitors tab there with all kinds of information. So again, it's padrepio.org. You can see all kinds of information, and you can actually fill in information, let us know that you're interested in coming on a pilgrimage. That would be more for large pilgrimage groups, but you can use the information there and come there anytime. We are open, come here anytime. We are open 7 days a week.
Well, I'm grateful for all that you do. I really do. I hope people will join in your annual Novena to Padre Pio. I know that comes up in September, and you and I often spend time, talking much more about Pio as we get close to his feast day there. Just some final thoughts. I have a moment or two left. Anything you want to leave us with? Any story from Padre Pio? Any final thoughts?
The final thought that I have is always so many, and I just read someone else's testimony about it today. You read about priests and GIs and so many stories of the GIs that went and saw him. And so of all of the miracles that you talked about, the spiritual gifts, stigmata, bilocation, speaking, understanding other languages he never studied, reading hearts, odor of sanctity, prophecy, discernment, healing, just goes on and on. But of all of those, everyone said that the most moving thing was the way that he said Mass, that he was just completely transformed and fixated when he said Mass, because he was, he was a living crucifix. He was suffering the wounds of Christ. He was experiencing his passion during the Mass. And Mass and confession were really the two hallmarks of his ministry and of his legacy. So it was really his spirituality. And he would, we talk about all those gifts that people had of kind of being lures, of things that would get curiosity seekers, people to come and see him, to learn more. And then he would always say that, it wasn't Padre Pio that they were attracted to, it was Christ. It was that he was leading them to Christ. So that's what I would leave you with.
We may need him even more during this time of Eucharistic revival that our bishops have kicked off, because it's true. That Mass was unbelievable. If anyone had an opportunity to see any video of it or to read about Padre Pio, such a wonderful way to leave us. Thank you very much, Nick. I'm grateful for your time.
Thank you so much. I hope that some of your listeners are come visit us. All the information you need is at PadrePio.org, and certainly hope that you'll send us your prayer intentions and participate with us in our 9-day Novena to St. Pio. Starts September 14th. All those prayers are on our website.
So PadrePio.com?
.org. PadrePio.org.
We'll get it. And then, of course, send your petitions there. And, one more place to get prayer. Hey, Nick, thank you. Enjoy your weekend, okay?
Thank you so much, Drew. You as well.
Always good to talk. That's Nick Jaboni. He's executive director of the National Center for Padre Pio in Bartow, Pennsylvania. And it's well worth seeing. I've often thought I would love one day just to go around the country. Maybe with you one day we'll do this. And just visit some of the really incredible shrines that we have here in this nation. That's a hidden one. There's a lot of little hidden shrines. I've had the opportunity to travel to the tomb of Father Mazzuchelli. He was one of the early pioneers in this church. And hold his penance chain. He had visions of the Mother of God. What a great place to go. But and there are these places where these relics remain. I think Padre Pio Center in Bartow, it's a hidden gem. And I think if you get a chance and you happen to be in the tri-state area there in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, go make a visit. If you're traveling across the country, happen to be in Philly, it's well worth stopping in. And then turn to him as well. Padre Pio was a saint of confession. He was the saint of the Eucharist. He was a saint that understood sacrifice. You know, he was a saint who lived the passion of our Lord. He endured it. And I think we can learn so much from him on so many different ways. So I'll leave you at that point, okay? Maybe Padre Pio is speaking to you today. Check it out. If you missed anything today, Maggie's going to have it up in about 60. Well, I'm going off in less than 60 seconds. She'll have it up probably within the hour. You can check out all of our podcasts. We had some great conversations today. You go to relevantradio.com, and the keyword is Drew. And you can say, hey, where's that location again, or where were we? You can find that and all the great conversations that we had. All right. I'm going to be away from the mic just for a couple days, so don't worry. I will be back. John Harper will be sitting in for me. Keep him company, okay? John does an excellent job, and I'm grateful to have him there. In the interim, I will be praying for you. I'd ask for your prayers, too, okay? We'll talk again soon. May God bless you until we talk again.